A look back at the year in Trump, the carrier deal, canning Comey, a shot at Joe Donnelly, that plus a dose of Mike Pence's ambitions and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 24th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the Trump-Pence team reached a deal with Carrier that will keep in Indiana some of the jobs the company planned to ship to Mexico. President-elect Trump and Governor Mike Pence were in Indiana to announce a deal with Carrier and its parent company, United Technologies, to keep 800 jobs at its Indianapolis plant that were slated to go to Mexico.
Thank you very much. Since the 1950s, Carrier has been a part of Indiana's manufacturing success story, and we've been proud of it. As governor, I couldn't be more pleased and grateful that thanks to the initiative and the leadership of President-elect Donald Trump, the Carrier has decided to stay and grow right here in America.
In exchange, the state will pay $7 million over 10 years in tax incentives.
You,
also behind Carrier's decision to keep some jobs in state is concern that United Technologies could lose some of its billions of dollars in federal contracts. President-elect Trump says the Carrier move won't be an isolated case.
Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequences. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'll tell you right now.
How much credit do Donald Trump and Mike Pence deserve here? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, are kudos due to the Trump-Pence team?
Oh, I think so. I think for the 800 employees that will still have jobs, I'm sure they're extremely grateful that this worked out. I think the 1,100 that are losing them are not as happy. And, of course, you know, Rex Nord's leaving and there's another company leaving. Obviously, the one change in this is the threat on the federal contracts, it seems to me. And I frankly am fine with that. But in order for that to have to be able to be done in the future when President-elect Trump is President Trump, it's going to require legislation. Congress is going to have to say that the federal procurement low bid requirement isn't necessarily there. And if you're exporting jobs, you're not eligible to bid on federal contracts. And I'm fine with that. I think we ought to do that. Why should we be subsidizing these companies when they're moving jobs abroad? But it's going to take legislation from Congress to do it.
Mike O'Brien, does this set a bad precedent that essentially if you're a company, you can threaten to leave and you'll get $7 million in state incentives?
I don't think that's going to be the scenario going forward. And I think you have to look at the reason that Carrier was planning to leave to begin with. It was because of the actions of the federal government over the last 8 years, policies that have been passed, regulations that have been passed that make it impossible to do business here. So while they're changing procurement laws, and they can change the EPA laws and they can change the punitive job regulations that they passed over the last eight years.
That make it easier for them to move jobs abroad. You're going to change those too?
We're going to change a lot of things.
I think
the grown-ups are in charge again.
Because that's a Republican initiative, so I hope you do change it. That'd be great.
Well, if it was really the federal regulations, which Carrier has said, which United Technologies has said, why the need for any state incentives?
Well, I think in some of these cases, you're going to have to build a bridge for some of these companies that already made a decision, right? I mean, there's going to be a lag time between right now where President-elect Trump has not even taken office and the time where you can get into the federal government and make some of these changes and unwind some of these things that are killing jobs in this country.
Donald Trump said the companies aren't going to be leaving anymore without consequences. Do you think that he's proving his point already?
The wall better go up sooner than later if that's going to be the case, and keeping people in, not just keeping people out. You know, politically, this is a home run, no matter how you slice it, and that's why I think we saw both Mike Pence and Donald Trump making sort of this almost a victory lap of sorts and delivering on this campaign promise. And the reason I say it's a political home run is Yes, there are questions about the more than 1,000 employees who still will lose their jobs. Yes, there are questions about the wisdom of offering $7 million in state incentives. But none of that is going to be remembered. What's remembered, especially beyond the borders of the state of Indiana, is that Donald Trump, he said he was going to take it to Carrier, and look, he's not even put his hand on the Bible and taken the oath yet. He's already delivered. So that's the – but the policy question is a lot more nuanced and a lot more complicated. And Lawrence Summers, former Treasury Secretary, sounded a warning saying this is – if this is going to be the practice, that is that the chief executive of our country calls up and sort of negotiates these one-offs or through bluster and potential bullying – then we're no better than the Banana Republics.
I don't think he can do that when he's president.
And that's why if,
but
in fact...
said, and Donald
right,
Trump has said that himself.
And that's why if it's you know, codified in the manner you describe,
right.
I think it makes it a lot better. Yeah, but I think politically, home run, jury's still out on the policy issues here.
Politically, home run, but more than half of the jobs that Carrier was threatening to cut from Indiana are getting
going.
Shipped to Mexico.
Right.
So is it really a win for Indiana?
Well, it is in a sense that you do have jobs that you weren't going to have, but it's a half glass half full scenario. It's not a complete win in that regard because there are a lot of people at that plant who still will be without jobs when they're phased out over time. I think that it's important to realize that it's pretty unusual to grant incentives to a company to retain jobs. It's happened in Indiana 5 times since 2009, and actually some of the other deals have been larger. But as we saw in one of the deals in a Fort Wayne company, BAE actually started cutting some jobs after it got the incentives to keep the jobs here. So I think what you're going to see is a new era in economic development, and it's probably due. Because if we don't, we will end up with that stadium scenario where a company that, you know, isn't happy with things or wants to raise its bottom line or do something will just say, we're going to leave. And it'll be sort of like when a football team decides it wants to leave. And what are you going to do for us? And I think there's one other thing that needs to be considered in all of this, including to all the regulations and the tax code, and that is the compensation and the way it is often built for executives of these companies.
Right.
These companies reward their executives for bottom line decisions, but they do it in a way that it really emphasizes the bottom line. Their compensation is often in the form of stock. And so until we change the culture or disincentivize that and you know, make it more of a dollar for dollar cost, you're going to continue to see executives who make these decisions because that's how they get paid.
I think some of the changes at the federal level have to reflect what we've done here in Indiana. We do have the incentive programs, and we do provide a carrot for some of these companies that want to relocate or invest or grow jobs here. But mostly we've created a stable environment. The environment at the national level through the federal government has not been stable for 8 years. Companies don't know what their tax climate is going to be. They don't know what their health care obligations are going to be. That part has to get fixed.
Yeah,
and it will be, I think, under President-elect Trump.
Well, you may have stability here, but you also have an average wage that's below the national average and continues to sink. So stability at a low level is not anything we should aspire to.
That was very important. I think the carrier deal, you're saving $31
The other part of that that John's talking about is correct. But the way you fix that is through the tax code. The average CEO used to make 40 times what the hourly wages of his employees are. Now it's 355 times. There's something wrong with that picture.
It's not just compensation. I think you're exactly right. That needs to be fixed. But keep in mind the liability. They have a fiduciary responsibility to produce the return for shareholders. And if there are for publicly
That's
traded
true.
Companies, you're going to see litigation out the wazoo. This will be a job creation for attorneys because we'll see shareholder groups saying, hey, you're costing me $65 million.
Well, all right.
That could be fixed legislatively, too.
Moving on. This week, a chaotic few days in the Trump administration amid the president's firing of FBI Director Comey and the Russia investigation. Here's some of the things that happened in Washington this week. Monday reports that President Trump disclosed highly classified intelligence obtained by Israel to Russian officials at the White House. Tuesday, the reveal of a memo from former FBI Director James Comey saying that Trump asked him to let go of the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Wednesday, the appointment of a special counsel, former FBI Director Robert Mueller, to lead the investigation into Russia's influence on the 2016 election. And amidst all of that were Indiana lawmakers' reactions. That includes applause for Mueller's appointment from Democrats and Republican Senator Todd Young, and Republican Congressman Todd Rokita attacked Washington liberals' phony attacks after news of President Trump's disclosure to the Russians.
Mike O'Brien, if you're a Republican lawmaker in the state, how do you respond to all of this?
I think these Republican lawmakers are going home this weekend. I think they're going to be faced with a constituency that, for the Republicans, most of these people overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump. They continue to overwhelmingly support Donald Trump. They sent him there to... They rolled a stick of dynamite into Washington, D.C. to prevent this kind of stuff. So we've had a week worth now. We've had weeks worth, months worth now. But we've had a particularly contentious week of the press running stories on anonymous sources, on former Obama administration sources, and throwing a lot of mud at this Trump administration and sidelining the agenda. I think if I'm a Republican lawmaker and I go home, my constituents are saying, go back there, figure out how to break through all this, repeal Obamacare, reform the tax code, do everything we did when we elected this president and this Congress back in November.
If you were advising a Republican lawmaker, what would you tell them?
Press, you'd have to shut Donald Trump up. I mean, he can't stay consistent with his message for one news cycle. I mean, he says one thing, then he sends somebody out to say something else, then he backtracks, then he goes back, He doesn't know what he's doing. And if I were a lawmaker, a Republican or otherwise, I'd run as far from him as I can, because I think this is going to be the most corrupt administration in the history of this country by the time he's done. I really do. I think we're going to be selling visas to the Russians. We're going to be doing all kinds of things, because that's the art of the deal. And I'd run from him. Whatever he had in last November is going to evaporate by 2018.
Mike talked about something that I'm curious about. The 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks has sort of been on a lot of interviews, done a lot of statements this week, expressing concern that we're losing focus from the things we said were the priorities. Is it possible, amidst all of this sort of chaos, for Congress to shut it all out and try and get stuff done, or is it impossible to get that done?
Well, the circuits that surrounded Washington because of all of the things that the president has done has made it very difficult to focus. And so when you can't focus, you don't go to the agenda. When was the last time you heard anything about the American Health Care Act? You haven't. When was the last time you heard anything about the budget? You haven't. And that's because it all gets buried by all of this falderal from all this stuff around the clown show. And so until that breaks, they aren't going to get anything done. Now, if you're Jim Banks, and what you're doing is you're saying, okay, we support the president, but we want this to stop. And I think Ann's right. You have to get the president to at least quit tweeting and counteracting all of the things that all of his people in his administration have been doing. And if you can get relative quiet, then you might be able to get some of that. Because I do think there's a hunger among people to get to the substance of the issue. Now, that doesn't diminish. People want to get, if there's a scandal, they want to get to the bottom of that too. But I think they really want to see things ratchet down and maybe focus on some things that need to be dealt with.
I mentioned Jim Banks's comments. Todd Rokita has taken a slightly different tact, which is attack the Washington liberals and the media and everybody trying to tear down the president. Is that going to play well in Indiana?
Sure it will. I mean, I think it will with a lot of folks. But, I mean, part of the reason this stuff is coming out is, you know, like as we mentioned, his tweeting, the president, you know, when he tweets about tapes and, you know,
puts
Director
it in quotation
Comey.
Marks.
Yes, you have to be quotation marks. You know, better hope there aren't tapes. Well, then what do you think? The next thing is, oh, there's memos, you know. I mean, he is feeding some of this. So the whole, you know, the media is to blame only goes so far.
Vice President Mike Pence issued a pointed denial this week of a New York Times story suggesting Pence is preparing for a 2020 run for president.
The Times reporters spoke to 75 GOP officials at every level. The conclusion? Multiple high-profile Republicans are mounting a shadow campaign for president as if President Donald Trump were not going to run in 2020. On Pence, the story pointed to his creation of a political fundraising committee, his installment of new chief of staff Nick Ayers, and whispers from Pence associates that the vice president would run in 2020 if Trump doesn't. Pence issued a statement in response, calling the report, quote, disgraceful and offensive, saying his team is focused on re-electing Trump in 2020 and that any suggestion otherwise is, quote, laughable and absurd.
And Delaney, doth Mike Pence protest too much?
I think it's pretty clear. He's positioning himself in the event that Donald Trump is forced out of office or forced not to seek re-election. The problem he has is he's the guy that stood up there next to Trump all through the campaign and said, I vouch for his character. I vouch for his fitness to be president. I vouch for his demeanor. I vouch for his truthfulness and his abilities and all of those other things. And turns out he misled us. And the adoring looks that he gives them every time he stands next to him, notwithstanding, he is certainly trying to position himself. But I think he'll have probably even less success than Gerald Ford had after pardoning Richard Nixon and then couldn't get himself elected. So I think Michael Pence is looking at what opportunities might present themselves.
You could argue that this is just a prudent thing by the Pence team, if it's not Mike Pence himself, that you have to prepare for all possibilities. But what do you make of the particularly strident denial? Doesn't that just lend more credence to the truthfulness of the story?
No, I think that's what you have to do, because it's reflective of what Mike Pence and Vice President Pence is currently doing, which is support Donald Trump. Now, to Ann's point, hey, fair enough. We'll get to the end of 4 years, and that's what you do, right? You get elected, and at the end of 4 years, whether you're Gerald Ford or the worst president in history, Jimmy Carter, who followed him, right? I mean, so we're gonna find out at the end of all this. But right now, Mike Pence is excelling in the role that he's cast to play, which is to be an ambassador for this country, whether it's overseas or around the country. So
you make a good point, though, Brandon, the notion that just how strident and how adamant this denial was, because to me, again, somebody used the word prudence. To me, you can look forward and be loyal to the existing president. They're not mutually exclusive, it seems to me. And the last thing the country would want probably is for the chief executive to keel over or be driven from office or quit or what. All the options are out there. And then have somebody, who's not even warmed up in the proverbial bullpen.
Right.
So I think
he's not warmed up in the proverbial bullpen. He doesn't know anything about
it. You just don't like sports metaphors. But if you did, you would have loved that one. So.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if what was in the New York Times report is true, that, some of the things they're doing to set themselves up for a 2020 run, if necessary, isn't that just the smart move?
Yes, I won't disagree with that at all. But I will say that the reason he reacted as strongly as he did is because it doesn't look good. I mean, you've got your top long-term fundraiser actively engaged. You've got one of the top Republican officials in Indiana, two of them, on a policy side and on the politics side, engaged completely. You've got a new chief of staff who is well-known for being aggressive. The optics can be a little troubling, and I think that's why he responded so vociferously.
I wonder if also
they've been involved for years. Nick Ayers isn't new to Pence world. He's been an advisor for 5 years.
No, but bringing him in now is obviously it's. I think it's one of those things, like, taken by itself, it's one thing.
Sure,
but when you add it up.
Honestly, fair enough. If you take by itself that he started a campaign committee and he's raising money separate of the president, right, which is unusual.
Yeah.
But it's also unusual for Trump to have had such an unconventional campaign that did not raise money in a traditional way.
In addition to the optics.
When Pence joined the ticket, he traditionalized a lot of those campaign functions that didn't exist in the Trump campaign.
I would just say
that would have been around for years in a presidential campaign.
You have a president who's shown an ability in recent weeks and months to turn
quickly
on people if there's any indication of a lack of loyalty. So that,
so
in addition to what John said,
this is why the adoring
the
smiles
concern.
Have been, so adamant lately.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: given all the controversy surrounding Donald Trump, will Mike Pence become president before the end of 2017? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question: is ILEARN a good new name for the state's student assessment? 8% say yes, 10% say no, 82% say it's not the name that's the problem. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. This week, President Donald Trump unveiled his tax reform proposal at the state fairgrounds in Indianapolis. Trump calls it a middle-class miracle. His tax reform proposal would eliminate the estate tax and make the first $12,000 of income per earner tax-free. It would also create more breaks for having children, create three tax brackets beginning at 12%, and limit the tax filings of most Americans to one page. Trump was joined at the speech by several members of Indiana's congressional delegation, including Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly, who's up for re-election next year.
If Senator Donnelly doesn't approve it, because, he's on the other side, we will come here, we will campaign against him like you wouldn't vote.
Donnelly issued a statement after the speech saying he works for Hoosiers and not the president or any political party. The Hoosier Democrat also expressed a desire for more details on the proposal.
Yeah.
Mike O'Brien, will the president's remarks play into Donnelly's thinking on the vote eventually?
Well, I'm not sure if those remarks, the remarks that were made during the campaign event or the official speech on Wednesday will play into it. But certainly, I mean, Senator Donnelly got on Air Force One, flew here, rode to the event with the president, and he's clearly feeling the pressure. I don't know a lot of Senate Democrats that are in that position right now. Senate Democrats have a big uphill climb to win any seats next year. They could lose ground pretty easily. There's 35 seats up next year. 25 of them are Democratic seats. 10 of those are in states that the president won. So he's got to think long and hard about where he lands on this. Of course, the details are beginning to come out. The framework of this tax plan, of course, was released Wednesday. There's more detail out later in the week or this weekend, early next week, when the text of the bill actually comes out, so we find out more details. But it simplifies the tax code. It brings us from seven tax brackets to three, doubles the standard deduction, and does a lot of good things for the middle class and for really all taxpayers, corporations, and small businesses alike. So this is a tough vote for Senator Donnelly if Democrats are going to decide they're going to be locked up against the president.
Is it going to be hard for Joe Donnelly to vote against this tax reform bill?
Well, we're going to have to see what the other, quote, details are. We know this is welfare for the rich. We know that. I mean, we don't know what Donald Trump's tax returns are since he hasn't seen fit to let them out. But the year he let the year that became public in 2006, if the alternative minimum tax, which is one of the proposals to be repealed, if that's supposed to equalize the burden of taxes on the rich, on the alternative minimum tax repeal alone in 2006, he would have saved $31 million in taxes, okay? So he will save probably hundreds of millions of dollars by this proposal. This is designed for rich people. Yeah, it gives a couple of crumbs down the line so they can say it's middle class
reform. Well, it entirely eliminates the income tax for
It also explodes the deficit, which is something Republicans don't seem to want to talk about now that there's a Republican in the White House. In fact, some Republican congressman said, well, that's something we talk about when there's a Democrat in the White House. But we don't have to be fiscally responsible when Republicans are in control. It's going to explode the deficit. It's the same trickle-down nonsense that we heard from Reagan and from Bush. It's supposed to generate all these jobs and massive job growth. And guess what? You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. This is the third time they've come up with the same kind of trickle-down idea. Cut taxes on the rich, and the economy is going to explode. It's never happened. And what's the definition of insanity? Repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome?
John, Joe Donnelly, you know, gets this threat, whatever it is, but
it's a threat.
Whether he votes yes or no on tax reform, Republicans are going to make him one of the most targeted senators in the country. Does his tax reform vote really matter?
I think in the grand fusillade, if you will, it'll be one of the bombs. But I think that you're absolutely right about the assessment. It's already to the point where, you know, the outpouring of attacks and offenses against Senator Donnelly have been going since, you know, the moment the last election was over and actually before. So an individual vote, even one on something as potentially large as tax reform, probably won't have a decisive impact. But in the overall scheme of things, you know, they're going to really come after him. And he's going to have not just a series of votes, but a record to defend himself with.
So Donnelly, Mike mentioned Donnelly flew on Air Force One. He rode with the president. He's had this discussion. He had the dinner at the White House with only a select group of senators. He was one of the three Democrats. So he gets to talk about how he's trying to work towards bipartisan solutions. But is Trump's message a bit of a blessing in disguise? Because we saw a fundraising letter, I think maybe even that day, if not the next day, saying, did you hear what President Trump said about Joe? They're coming after him and you need to support us. Is it almost a blessing because he kind of gets to have it both ways?
If you're looking for a silver lining, I guess that's, and you're in that business. Yeah, I guess there is some element, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess in terms of energizing the proverbial base, getting people who might be lackadaisical thinking, he's an incumbent. And if there are people, I don't know, that don't, by the end of this, they won't be lackadaisical.
Yeah, probably not.
For the reasons you mentioned. But if they're thinking, power of incumbency, I don't really need to get out, work, I don't need to open my wallet, my bank account, and help the campaign, this might be the kind of thing that would energize them. But I think you make a good point, Brandon, when you ask sort of the hypothetical, what if Joe Donnelly did, in fact, vote for tax reform. I can't imagine a scenario in which Donald Trump is going to cut a television spot for him or campaign for him, nor would he call off the dogs with whatever Republican. And I can't imagine he would say, you know, hey, this is my guy, go easy. So I don't know what the end result, you know.
So there's no upside, is what you're saying.
I don't know what it is. I can't imagine.
And the bill hurts Hoosiers.
Other than tax reform for middle class.
It's not tax reform.
Well, finally, a Carmel homeowner put up a scarecrow of Donald Trump in their front yard this week, and they say the attention it's drawn might prompt them to create a scarecrow of Mike Pence and Delaney. The Trump scarecrow is characterized by that screaming pumpkin head and tiny hands. What would the Pence scarecrow include?
You know, I'm not sure what it would include, but if there's a female scarecrow around there, there better be one of Mother Pence very close or heads will roll.
Or I could put an Ann Delaney scarecrow up in my yard.
I would pay money to see that. That's all for this look back at the year in Trump. Many thanks to our panelists who made my first year as host a special one. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Have a happy and safe holiday weekend, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.